This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting for AvWeb and Aviation Consumer. We've been hitting the fuel issue hard over the past couple of weeks, but one thing we've overlooked is the MoGas issue and whether or not MoGas can be made more marketable and more widely available on U.S. airports. And today we've got Kent Meisgage, who's working with a couple of coalitions to make that happen. Thanks for being with us, Kent.
My pleasure.
Kent, first tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this, and then we'll talk about the particulars.
I've flown older aircraft for a number of years and obviously saw an advantage of using MoGas from a cost standpoint and learned about the STCs from the EAA and from Peterson some years ago. Used most recently MoGas in my Cessna 170, which I had through last fall. With success, I was very pleased with it, obviously pleased with the lower cost, but then we started to notice ethanol appearing in gasoline around us here in central North Carolina. And that prompted me to take a closer look at the whole history of ethanol and the impact, advantages and disadvantages in aviation. And one thing has just basically led to another that now myself with a few others have become spokespeople for trying to get MoGas back in our airports.
Now, in the late 1980s, the price delta between MoGas and 100 low lead was greater than it was a few years later, and probably greater than it is now, and that was one of the factors. But I think ethanol, we could safely say, is the big factor that pushed MoGas out of the aviation market.
That's been the second. The first one, really, as you pointed out, came about in the 80s when the price differential was such that it didn't make a whole lot of sense for airports to put it in, and those that did, sometimes the actual consumption didn't live up to the promises from aviators that had STCs for it, and quite frankly, they were happy to haul in fuel themselves from the local gas station. You're always going to pay a surcharge, of course, to have gasoline delivered to an airport. About the time that avgas prices took off a couple of years ago, and people started looking back into MoGas again, many of them, like myself, discovered that it was hard to find it without ethanol. And of course, all of the STCs for MoGas in aircraft do not permit any ethanol. So it's a real issue then now.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the ethanol. There have been some STCs, some experimental STCs, I guess, or small-scale STCs that allow use of ethanol and gas up to 10%, but those haven't really proven practical. So now here we are in 2010. You've got a lot of conventional MoGas STCs out there. Of course, they're not selling because you can't reliably get MoGas without ethanol, but that's not the same as not being able to get it at all.
This is true. There's approximately 60,000 STCs out there, most of them here in the U.S., and they really do cover a wide range of engines all the way up through 180 horsepower power plants. And indeed, anywhere between 80 and 90% of all gasoline fuels now, depending on who made the estimate, have ethanol in them, and a lot of that has to do with federal mandates through the ISA 2007 law that basically forces gasoline suppliers to blend in ethanol. So it has become more difficult. We've been a little encouraged here recently with what we're seeing as a comeback of ethanol for a couple of reasons. One, a lot of people would prefer not having it in their fuel tanks for automobiles for a variety of reasons. And then there are also a community of other recreational vehicle owners other than airplane owners that may not use ethanol in their engines, in particular boaters, quite a few of the ATVs, snowmobiles, emergency power generators. There really is quite a large community outside of aviation that needs ethanol-free fuels.
Run us through the supply chain. How is it that ethanol-free gas gets onto an airport? What does the airport operator, FBO, have to do?
Well, it's basically the same as he's faced with his other aviation fuels. He has to find suppliers, and there are branded suppliers and there are unbranded suppliers. These that do have ethanol-free fuel are typically also the same companies that are supplying marinas. That's for that reason we see a greater prevalence of ethanol-free fuel at gas stations wherever you find a lot of boating activity. So basically, if you track down who's supplying ethanol-free fuel at the few airports, only about 100 or so left in the U.S. that have it, you're going to find it's typically the same people locally that are supplying to marinas and some of the gas stations.
Tell us a little bit about the coalition work that you're doing, the name of the coalition, and give us the website as well.
Actually, two coalitions, and I have to give credit to the founder of the first one. That's the Ethanol-Free Premium Gas Coalition. This was started by Dean Billing out in Oregon together with a number of different groups and also leaders of local EAA chapters out there, and that's the E0PC.com. This is a good resource for the history of legislation that brought about ethanol production and distribution in this country, and also the history of legislation, because it really is a patchwork across the country of legislation in the various states pertaining to the requirement to have ethanol or not have it, to exclude it for certain groups. That's a real good basic resource. More recently, we've created another website called flyunleaded.com that really focuses in on current issues regarding ethanol-free mogas, a little bit of the history, but also where you can find it, why it's important, some of the problems with ethanol and fuels. We thought it was time to do something a little more focused in preparation for our talk here in Oshkosh in a few weeks.
And what do you think has to happen in general terms to get more acceptance and more marketability of ethanol-free mogas?
There are two impediments, of course, to getting it onto an airfield. I think it's well accepted. The documentation out there on mogas in aircraft is now, coming up on 30 years old. Tremendous amount of research and testing done on the part of the EAA and especially Todd Peterson at Peterson Aviation. So there's plenty of documentation on the pros and cons for using mogas in aircraft. The other information on just in general how to get it onto an airfield, the two impediments, obviously you have to have a supplier. And last year we've been able to get in touch with a lot of the airfields that still have mogas and find out who supplies it, and we're happy to share that information with anyone who wants it. There is a new website that we only recently learned about. It's called puregas.org, pure-gas.org. And this is a voluntary effort from actually an owner of a classic motorcycle up in Wisconsin that also can't use ethanol. And this has been a great resource for finding gas stations and marinas that have ethanol free. And typically you can call them and ask who's their distributor in potentially getting on an airfield. The other, of course, big impediment is getting a fuel pump onto an airfield. And that's really depends a lot on the economics. It's a bit of a chicken and egg problem, and also an issue whether the local airport authority and the FBO are even interested, and that really has to be handled on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, and last, tell us when and where you're going to be speaking at Oshkosh.
Thank you. Yes, Tuesday, July 27th, 11:30, Dake 1 Pavilion.
Okay, we'll put that on our calendar. Thanks for speaking with us, Kent.
My pleasure.
We've been speaking with Kent Meisgades, who's working with a couple of coalitions to bring mogas into better marketability on U.S. airports. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting for AvWeb and Aviation Consumer. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.